pleasure to be in this room with so many Talmidim. I'm told this is for new Talmidim, is that correct? I see some familiar faces from years ago, but I won't kick them out. Okay. I was just read officially what I'm supposed to be speaking about. When Torah, Talmud Torah, learning Torah can make conflict or collide with other life obligations. It's a very important topic. And we'll speak about it for a number of minutes, and then I want to open the floor for questions, because I feel that the questions are probably more important than what I have to say initially. The Gemara discusses in Masechta Moed Katan what happens if a person who's supposed to be learning Torah has an opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah. That's certainly a life obligation to fulfill a mitzvah. Why am I starting with a mitzvah? Because there's certain things you have to do. Everyone understands you have to eat and you have to sleep. You have to do basic things. That's not the question that's being discussed in this topic. That's obvious. You have to eat. You have to sleep. How much you have to eat? Well, after what I just took from the Nash table, I don't know if that's appropriate for me to answer that question. You have to eat enough to keep you going. Pasuk said, "Tzadik ochel asova nafsho," which means you should eat enough to keep yourself satiated. But means much more than that. You really shouldn't be. How much the food they gave you over this orientation week at Shabbos, and when I used to see it was more than you really need. But okay, and how much you have to sleep? That's a much more significant question. Talmid in the yeshiva, sometimes they get to do with less sleep than they really should be doing with. Every person has to know how much he needs to sleep. But this is a significant question. Some don't, it's metabolism. Some need more and some need less. And we all hear about the story of the Gedolim. They forced themselves over Yashiv Zatzal. He forced himself to get up 2 o'clock in the morning with an alarm clock every day. And we're not in that level. We're not in that level. You have to sleep as much as you have to sleep. Well, that itself is a number which is different for different people. The Pasuk does say that Kedela Sovev Al Tziro Kein Otzal Al Mitoso. As the door swings on its hinge, so a lazy person swings in his bed. Turns and turns. Turning over in bed like that for someone who's already had a night seat, that's not right. The Pasuk says it's not right. But what is a night seat? How many hours is a night seat? The Rambam, who was a medical man, suggests that you sleep for 8 hours a night. And the Pasuk is quoted. Pasuk, I think it's an Eov. Yoshanti, I sleep. Oz, then Yanuachli. I'll be rested. We all know that Oz, Aleph, Zion, in Gematria, is 8. 1 and 7 is 8. So the Rambam says, you're supposed to sleep 8 hours every night. In this room, by show of hands, who sleeps 8 hours a night? Good for you. Good for you, Father Rambam. I'm very proud of you. But that's only 2 people out of a room full of people. So they asked the Chasam Sofer, who slept much less than that, and said, how could you go against the Rambam? He quoted even a pasuk with a remez, Yashanti Oz, you need to sleep 8 hours. He said, yeah, I follow the same pasuk. How? Yashanti, I sleep. Oz, 8 hours, okay. But let's finish the pasuk. Yanuach, I'm rested. Li, what is Li? Lamed Yud is 40. So if I sleep 8 hours, I'm rested for 40 hours. That means you sleep 4 hours a night. Right? 8 out of 48. That was his clever response, the Chasam Sofer. He probably didn't sleep more than 4 hours a night. Who in this room sleeps 4 hours a night? And not more than that. Okay, so we are somewhere between the Chasam Sofer and the Rambam, most of us, which is okay. Some need 6, some need 7. Less than 6, it's hard to get along with. I'm saying it for a reason, because they're going to come here in this yeshiva with a double program. Maybe it demands on your time. So the sleep may be called into question. So you have to be careful to maintain a proper sleep regimen, whatever that means. That's really not what we want to discuss primarily. These are obvious needs. A person has to eat and sleep. No question about that. Oh. But a mitzvah is not such an obvious need that maybe you shouldn't be doing the mitzvah. So the Gemara in fact says maybe you shouldn't. Torah is your primary mitzvah. Every individual is obligated to study Torah whenever he can. And mitzvah, well, it depends, says the Gemara Masechta Moed Katan. The 2 kinds of mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah she'ef shal asoseh de'acherim. Let someone else do the mitzvah. And the mitzvah she'ef shal de'acherim. No one else can do it but you. You have to do it. No one else can do it besides you. That's the distinction which the Gemara draws. If no one else can do it, close your Gemara, your Chumash, your Mishnah Berurah, whatever you're learning, close it up, go do the mitzvah and come back and learn. If, however, it's a mitzvah that someone else can do, let someone else do it. Because someone else, if he wouldn't be doing the mitzvahs, likely he might be doing something else besides learning. Maybe watching TV, maybe taking a walk. Let him stop his other activity and let him learn. Let him do the mitzvah, you learn. It's a win-win. The mitzvah gets done by somebody who otherwise would not be doing anything constructive, and you can learn. If you do the mitzvah, very nice to do the mitzvah, you stopped learning, the other fellow never started learning, so it's a net loss for Klal Yisrael. It's a clear, this is the Gemara Moed Katan, it's a very important, so Rambam quotes it, the halacha, that's the rule. There are many mitzvahs here, you're coming to yeshiva, there are a whole slew of mitzvahs, are going to give you a list, do this, do this, do this, do this, just club and the other club and the third club. And there's so many mitzvahs that are wonderful things to do. Wonderful, wonderful. I give you my word. You can be busy with mitzvahs all day long and never open up a sefer. Never. You always find another big kacholim and another gemilas chasadim and another. No, it's endless. Big city here, big community. But you weren't put into this world to do mitzvahs. You were put into the world to do mitzvahs which no one else can do. You have to do it yourself. Obviously, your personal mitzvahs, you got to do what you have to do in terms of your own mitzvah activities, but there are other things which only you can do. Maybe only you can bring joy to someone who needs a boost. As we shall see, kibud av aim, only you can do. You can't let someone else do kibud av. You should honor your father. Someone else honors your father. It's not kibud av aim. However that honor is defined. So there are many mitzvahs which only you can do, and you're required to do it, even if you're going to have to close the Gemara and come and go back to it. But if someone else can do it, so let someone else do it. I tell my Talmidim, tomorrow will be the first Shia, I tell my Talmidim all the time, you have enough on your plate, what we call in our language a double program. A double program involves, I tell my Talmidim, I'm speaking to a broader audience, but in my opinion, it means your person should be at the Siddurim, the Seder starts at 9 o'clock in the morning, and ends generally at 12 o'clock, and then you have a little lunch break, and then you go to Shir. And then I believe strongly every person should really have a night seder, some more, some less, but a night seder there has to be, because that's such an important part of being a Ben Torah. And you have your college class and your college work on top of that. Fills up the day. There's not much time left. People who take upon themselves these extracurricular activities, as noble as they may be, and as, forgive the expression, resume building as they may be, when the person does it for noble reasons or for resume building reasons, that's not the point right now. It can overwhelm you to the point you cannot, they just turned some cake over there. One of them had a little icing, right? You have to have the cake before the icing. You can't have icing without cake. I mean, icing without cake has no top, right? The cake is your limudei Torah, your limudei chol. That's the cake. The icing is the other activities, but you have to be budgeting your time appropriately. That's the first very important rule in this respect. Now, I mentioned kibud av in particular. The Gemara tells us, somewhat paradoxically, in Masechta Megillah, Rashi quotes in the Chumash, that Talmud Torah is greater than kibud av. Some of you may recall the proof text that Yaakov Avinu was punished for the years that he was away from his father Yitzchak, but the 14 years he sat in yeshiva he was not punished for. We'll end of the first paragraph of Masechta Megillah. One looks carefully at the sources, one realizes the reason for that is that the individual who leaves his parental home and comes to a yeshiva for purposes of learning Torah, so therefore the father really has no right to ask the child to leave the yeshiva and come back and serve him on a daily basis, because the child has to be in the yeshiva. Being around the house was going to take away his possibilities of learning. However, if you look at Pischet Shuv and Yoradesim and Reish Mem, you'll see it. A person is home. He's not in the yeshiva. And he has to open up his Gemara, his Chumash is open. And his father says, Chaim, please bring me a cup of tea. He says, Dad, I read that if I'm learning, I don't have to bring you a cup of tea. That kid deserves a patch. What kind of ridiculous thing is that? Give your father the tea and go back to your Gemara. That's not the same as your father says, don't go to yeshiva because I need you around my house. I live in whoever I live. I can't be in the house. I have no yeshiva there. I have no learning. I have no chevra there. I have no rebbe's there. It's very important to understand that even when we say Talmud Torah is Trump's kibud av, it's only for those who are in yeshiva right now. Rabosei, I assume you're all living here in the yeshiva on the campus, and your father doesn't live in Washington Heights. So, Mamela, you can't make him a cup of tea on a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You're here in the yeshiva. Is he going for Shabbos? He said, give me a cup of tea. I don't say, I can't. My Rebbe said, Talmud Torah is more important. I'm being Mavis Sedra. That's an absurdity. You go give the tea, and then you come back to the Mavis Sedra. It's very important to put things in proper perspective. It's very, very important. So these, as far as mitzvahs are concerned. There are other activities in life which have value, and we have to understand that the very essence of our yeshiva here in this campus speaks to these values. Specifically, let us speak about a parnasa. A person has to earn a livelihood, and the reason why he does, it says in Shulchan Aruch, a person who does not have any money, so it's chas v'shalom, it could lead him to terrible things, chalila gzela, or other nefarious activities, or the lack of a parnasa to maintain a family. So a person has to have a parnasa. In today's world, it's very difficult to find a parnasa without a college degree, and perhaps even beyond that. Sure, there are these multi-millionaire businessmen who don't even know how to sign their names. That we know, but you can't count on that. You can't count on that. In today's world, if you want to be into business, you probably need an MBA or something like that to get started. That's the reality. Again, numerous exceptions, but it's hard to rely on your being that exception. So therefore, a person who is studying in his selected field of study, in order to get a proper degree, in order to earn a livelihood in the way that the person feels is most appropriate and attracts him the most, that's completely legitimate and a praiseworthy activity. We generally feel that although there are rules and regulations in Torah, there's much room for what we call autonomy and personal choice. Something in terms of how to learn. Still go back to the Torah spot. Some want to learn Be'iyun, some want to learn Bekiyas, some want to learn Rabbi Exashir, Rabbi Wyshir, some want to learn more Gemara, some want to learn more Chumash, more Halacha. There's no time. I'm not here to speak on behalf of the administration of our yeshiva. They have certain rules and regulations, but in general, there's a lot of autonomy. A person should do what he wants. Chazal have an expression, Ein adam lomed elo b'mokom shelibo chofetz. What he wants, place he wants, the Gemara that he wants, there's a Torah that he wants, fine. The Rebbe that he wants. The same thing is true in terms of other what we'll call career choices. Someone wants to be a lawyer, someone wants to be a doctor, a psychologist, an accountant, a businessman. Everyone has, their various choices that they make based on a whole variety of considerations, and it's a very personal choice. I believe that a person who wishes to engage in any of those professions or the others I didn't mention certainly has a right to make that choice with the consequences that are attached to those choices. I should never leave out the choice of being a mechanech or a rav, which is certainly a noble profession. But whatever choice you make, there are consequences. Certain courses of study are harder than others, take longer than others, involve more work than others. And I'm not here to tell you which you should choose. But I'm here to tell you that if a person chose to become a doctor, and he's sweating over chemistry, and next year organic chemistry, and it is his friend who wants to be a lawyer, is on easy street. He takes easier courses, and he'll do well on the LSATs. He doesn't have to know so much science, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So you say, oy vey, my friend who's going to be a lawyer, he spends 3 years in the yeshiva, he's learning X number of hours. And because of my difficult course of study, mom X minus one or X minus two per day. That's not a cause for a guilty conscience, because you chose your field and you have a right to choose your field. If it takes more time, it takes more time. Look, you all have friends or relatives who are not going to college at all. They're sitting and learning in various yeshivas throughout the world, whether here or in Eretz Yisrael, and they're not spending any time on collegiate study. So you'll say, oy vey, I wanted to be like that. If you want to be like that, that's your choice. I'm not going to oppose it. But if you go there, then after it's all over, how are you going to earn a livelihood? It's not so simple. So there's no reason to have a guilty conscience that you're in college or they're taking a harder course in college than somebody else is taking. If that's the mokom shalibo chafetz, the place where your heart takes you in order to earn a livelihood. And remember, the Gemara tells us in Masechta Brachos, some of you will maybe learn Daf Yomi, coming up in sometime next week. The Gemara tells us, we say it every single day in davening, so it should be clear to you, V'hoyam shemoa tishmol mitzvosai, you were going to observe my mitzvahs. That sounds like a pretty good Jew was observed, and it goes further. The avas Hashem alkechem, love the b'chol levavchem b'chol nafshchem. Hey, that's a pretty high level, would you say? Ah, who agrees? Who disagrees? Who thinks it's a high level? Raise your hand. Who thinks it's a low level? Raise your hand. Yeah? Oh, wow. Oh, this guy's know their stuff. So, the presumably such of an individual, as the Gemara seems to put it according to the words of Rabbi Yishmael on that daf, is also retzono shel makom, to do what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. He's earning a living. And then, believe me, it wasn't so easy to earn a living as a farmer either. Safta de ganecha, v'sirosh chav yitzarecha. And he'd be up early in the morning and late at night and work at certain times of the year very, very hard. And then you're doing retzono shel makom. That's how we pass on halacha, like Rabbi Yishmael. Now, it is true, as the gentleman brought to our attention, that there's a differing opinion of the Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. So the person should learn all the time. How's he going to survive? Or what's going to live? Zocha nasa malach toidei acherim. Somehow or other, he'll get a living from someone else. Or somehow or other, he'll be able to put bread on the table. And someone who's doing retzono shel makom should be learning all the time. So the Marsha asks a question on the spot in the beginning of the sixth parak in Masechta Brachos. But it says that he's loved the b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshem. How can you call such an individual eino osu retzono shel makom? So as was pointed out, it's missing one word. Contrast that, as you all know, to the beginning of the first parasha of Shema. That's where an individual and Maodech can be all your forces, all your money, two different interpretations. This individual, the average Jew, is not willing to put in all his money or all his kochos into serving Hashem. So Rabbi Shimon Yochai says he's a second-class citizen. He's not really doing things which are retzono shel makom. But the Gemara seems to indicate on that same daf, Har be'oskam Shimon ben Yochai v'lo also be'adam. They didn't succeed. Rabbi Yishmael v'also be'adam. So we paskin, if you will, like Rabbi Yishmael, that the average individual is supposed to be earning a living, and as such, whatever time he spends in preparation for that endeavor is time well spent, and he's also retzono shel makom. Yes, it's true. The Rabbi Chaim V'Lozhin, quoted by the Bir Alok and Simon Kufnun Vav, says on the word harbe, many, try to emulate Rabbi Shimon Yochai, it's not going to work. But for those individuals who want to learn all the time and somehow you got a living and be totally involved in serving Hashem, so more power to them. And we're the last people to foreclose that possibility. But for the Hamon Am, for the masses, an individual who is doing what he has to do in order to earn a livelihood is doing Ritzono Shamak. He's doing what the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants of him. And no one should have a guilty conscience because you're spending time on this worthy endeavor. If you're wasting time, you're goofing off, and you're, whatever, I don't want to go into details, then if you have a guilty conscience, that's good. Because for us, time is everything. Time is life. Right? Life is simply an aggregate of time. And every minute that's wasted is wasted. So we're not in favor of wasting time. But spending time in an appropriate fashion, not over a Gemara, but maybe in a chemistry lab or in a pre-law class or in studying psychology or in Sim School of Business and studying accounting, these are efforts in order to be able to ultimately earn a livelihood. And these are completely appropriate expenditure of time, 100%. Oh. So now, having said that, the question is going to be, and I'm sure this is going to be raised to you more than once, well, what if here I am in the Yeshiva College, which is a liberal arts college, and there were classes in the college that I don't necessarily need for my profession at the end of the day. It's just, you know, I am thirsty for knowledge. I want to avail myself of the knowledge that this college has to offer. And there's a lot of wonderful knowledge here in this college. I agree. The first is I went there myself quite a number of years ago. So a lot to be learned. So that's a discussion which I want to cut short because I want to open the floor to questions. But that is a very serious discussion as to what classes in this college and beyond are appropriate for someone to study, even in the absence of any direct or even indirect impact on an individual's livelihood, which, as we said before, is completely justifiable. And I'll give you some examples of what I think. The study of language is important. To be able to read and write. I'm talking about the English language, which is what we, generally speaking, are involved in. It's important that you, no matter what field you go into, from the rabbinate to education, down to law, and even if you're in a non-word related professions such as medicine and maybe even business perhaps, you have to know. You have to know how to read, you have to know how to write. Too many people I know, I do mock papers for my Talmidim, and most of them write in English, some write in Hebrew, most of them write in English. And there's what to be gained by some of the classes here in writing. I'll leave it at that. I don't want to be overly harsh. What to be gained? Simply grammar, spelling. Spelling got much better than spell check. Is there a grammar check on my blast? Does it exist? Not yet. Yeah, yeah.
My kids haven't found it yet.
If your kids haven't found it, it doesn't exist. The younger you are, the more you have the ability to find these things. Anyway, so it's important. That's certainly important. Those who are taking, you know, the natural sciences, most of those who take it for the profession, but they may still have some kind of requirement, which they used to call it science for dummies and things of this nature. Don't blow it. Use it as an opportunity to understand the flow sabore. You know, most people are not going to be majoring in physics, but I'm told that the physicists are very, very high percentage believe in God. Not even by the non-Jewish, but they see, they're just astounded by the flow sabore. It's just overwhelming. The Rambam said so. The Rambam says in Hilchos Yisrael HaTorah, a person sees the world with the natural miracles of everyday life. He's overwhelmed with a feeling of knowledge of Hashem and love of Hashem. And this is also important. Some of the more, how should we say, soft sciences, like psychology. Psychology is very, very important. Very important, just to deal with your own self and deal with other people in your life. A lot of very keen insights that can be derived from classes given here in this institution, even over and above what you'll need for your immediate profession. It's important to understand. There are a number of sensitive, those are, I think, to me, are no-brainers, so they can each lead to positive developments for you, again, over and above any parnassah implications they may have. But there are other clauses which you have to be careful about, and I'm make no bones about it. I'm telling you the truth as I see it. Not sure everyone in the administration agrees with me, but I have to say what I think is the truth. There are a number of other sets of courses here which you have to proceed with a little bit more caution. Let's talk about philosophy. Rashba said a person before 25 shouldn't study philosophy. School was not founded by the Rashba as a philosophy department. And people here, generally speaking, already finished before 2025. And the fear is, and if you think it's an unjustified fear, think again, because I know better than you, not because I'm smarter, but because I just have to deal with more cases. But even to this day, there are those who get involved in philosophy who go simply off the derech. They lose their amunah. I speak with great pain. I'm speaking of literally current information, not until 2012. It's very painful. Very painful. So you have to be careful. The Rambam said you really shouldn't be studying these things until you filled your stomach, as he puts it, with meat and wine. He means Gemara, means learning. But even that's not a full guarantee. This individual I'm alluding to cryptically, a major Talmud Chacham, but somehow philosophy got the best of him. And I hope it'll turn around, but right now it's a tragedy. So to be careful if you approach philosophy. That's number one. Number two, some of what we call today the humanities are not so human. I'm sorry to say it. Literature. I'm not opposed to classic, wholesome literature, which has a lot to teach us. But some of the literature that exists today, it's considered to be the appropriate literature based on the teachers of today in the United States of America, and this college is not such an exception, to me, are halachically problematic in the literal sense. We are taught in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Shabbos, I think Shemin Shin Vav, we're not supposed to read sexually arousing material. It's against the Torah, and some of this is included in that. And we speak about humanity, it also includes art, and art is also has this aspect to it, which is a halachic a problem. Some of the literature is just so, even if it's not arousing, but it's just profane and disgusting. And yeah, but there is an important lesson to be learned. Who says that the and justifies the means. Maybe there is an important lesson to be learned from this literary piece, but give me another way to learn this lesson. Right? There is good literature out there, which is clean, which is not in any way suggestive, provocative from the sexual perspective. And but again, proceed with caution. And perhaps most delicately, I have to tread very lightly over here, even what's called today some of the academic Jewish courses, there are certain issues you have to be careful about, whether we talk about Bible or Jewish history, where sometimes there, as well as in art and some literature, there could be certain references to other religions, believe it or not, this is a Jewish college, and it's not so simple, right? Not so simple. We read just yesterday in the Torah that we're not supposed to follow the what's called the Toavos HaGoyim HaHeim, those despicable kinds of activities that are being done by the nations of the world, whether they be in the sexual realm, which we alluded to earlier, whether they be in the Avodah Zarah realm. And that affects some of the literature, some of the art, and even introduced in some of the Jewish studies. I mean, when I was in this college, one of the Jewish history teachers asked us to read the New Testament. So I pulled out the Rambam, where the Rambam says, this was Avodah Zarah, the way I read it, that you shouldn't be reading the New Testament. You're not supposed to read these books. So the professor was a big Talmud Chacham on the Yerei Shemayim, said, yeah, it's true, but it says in the Gemara that you're not supposed to learn these things, but that's for its own sake. But you're supposed to learn about it. Rashi even quotes part of it, yesterday's parasha, Lahavinu Lahoros. In other words, to know what's bad about it, right? Lo silmad lasos, if you want to be involved for curiosity or to get involved in it, but you want to be able to teach others to stay away from it, then if you have to know what it is, if you plan to be battling the missionaries, you have to know a lot about Christianity, by definition. To which I responded to this very wonderful teacher, 100%, but I have no plans. I don't plan to go into that field. So he exempted me. So you don't have to read it. Within the Bible, probably there are certain issues which are somewhat problematic in terms of certain kinds of criticism. That's sometimes being taught, which we better stay away from. Which unfortunately has also claimed its share of individuals who went off because they were somehow taken by this kind of criticism, which denies to one extent or other the divinity of the Torah. You have to be careful. You have to be careful. I'm not making any definitive statements. Just have to be careful. So therefore, you're here. Many of you are the first week here in our yeshiva, and already the rabbi's going to tell you about the problems. No. Look, be an optimist. I'm a big optimist myself. The overwhelming majority of the talmidim come through this yeshiva, come through well, and even those who were when they were here weren't the biggest masmidim, and I count many talmidim like that in my list of. I mean, over many, many years, you'd be surprised how they come out so well afterwards. And then many years later, they're learning Daf Yomi, despite the very hectic and grueling schedule. And many of them are leaders of their particular communities, where they happen to live. I, frankly, having had many Talmidim over many years, I can't say I keep up with all of them, but many of them I keep up with, and I'm proud of them. And I suspect that our yeshiva will be proud of you when you, Mitzvashem, go out into this world. And make a Kiddush Hashem, notwithstanding imperfection during your years here in the yeshiva. No one is perfect. No one is perfect. I have to keep that in mind. No one is perfect. We make mistakes. We some squander opportunities. We do things we shouldn't be doing or don't do things we should be doing. That is part of life. That is part of life. It's so appropriate that you're beginning your stay in the yeshiva here in Chodesh Elul. Chodesh Elul, as you all know, is a month of introspection. Introspection. A time to make a cheshbon, to make a calculation. What you've done wrong in the past, what you've done right in the past, and most importantly, going forward. Time of what we call resolutions, some people call New Year's resolutions, Kabbalos, as the Muslim Sfarim and Muslim Yeshivas would call it. Kabbalos. I recommend you take some very simple Kabbalos as you come in. Number one Kabbalah is, as I said at the very beginning, is to review. You'll get enough sleep. But try, whatever that means, you fill in the number. Try, you get enough sleep. That means you have to give up certain that kind of activities, whether it be extracurricular or social or whatever it is. So be it. You have to have the cake before the icing. You have to be ready to be mekabel on yourselves that you have to focus on your limudei kodesh, on your limudei chol. And there's really not much time left after that. If you want to get enough sleep and want to be, the Prophet Ben Torah spoke about being in Seder every day and in Shir and have a night Seder and do well in your college classes, there's just that much you can do. Unless a person's an Elul, a person's a prodigy, then you can do almost anything. But most people are not in that category. That's an important Kabbalah to make, to budget your time appropriately, not to squander away time. You know, part of the quote collegiate experience, and it's defined in America, is to have these all night whatever they call them sessions, which is this talk about every silliness under the sun. And I'm sorry to say, and I should mention this right away, in some colleges, part of the experience is intoxication. I'm sorry to say it. I shouldn't be necessary to say it in this room, but it exists. It's part of the college experience. You know, the drinking that goes on in almost every university campus. Here, it's contained, Baruch Hashem, but I'm not. I wasn't born yesterday. Someone's looking for intoxication. They can find it. And this I really even shouldn't mention, but people looking for drugs in Washington Heights, this is can be found. I shouldn't say not. You can find it in Bnei Brak too, but it's not as difficult to find over here. But these things are completely off bounds, totally off bounds, inappropriate behavior for anybody. Kavachomer, Ben Torah, Ben Yeshiva. You need to call upon yourself. You're not going to be getting involved in any such chaburas, any such activities. Just run away. I should mention, it's not the direct topic of this discussion, but I should mention it anyway, something called the internet, which I'm sure all of you are familiar with. That's a trap. Many wonderful things to help you with your schoolwork, even your shiur work. Internet's very helpful. But it's a trap. You have to be kabbal upon yourself. You're not going to fall into that trap. You need kabbalas. Now, there are certain kinds of precautions that are being taken. I'm not sure if they're in place yet in this yeshiva. They are in place to some extent. They blocked out a few things. Rabbi Reis Shlita, a wonderful manal, took flack. Believe it or not, the headline in the student newspaper, a chutzpah. He wants to filter out pornography. What? What? What does that mean? What does that mean? They have the right. They have no self-respect. I insist there be pornography on my internet. Of course, I won't use a chas v'shalom. But it has to be there so I can make the choice. What does that mean? Month of Elul, we should try to. We say every morning, Al tevien el olodei nisayon. Don't bring us to any nisayon. We have to try to stop the nisyonos. The Gemara says in Masechta Baba Basra, end of the third parak, if a person has two paths, one where there are scantily clad women, and one where there are not, and he decides to walk on the former path, and he's going to close his eyes, he's a rasha. Just to walk on that path. And one of the recent books called Internet Balacha says, for that reason, if you don't use a filter, you're a rasha. Even if you are able to control yourself ultimately, you have no business being that way. And then all these pop-ups and this, I don't want to go into all these details. And I'm telling you from experience, again, I'm not smarting you from experience, that there are individuals whose first name is Rabbi and whose beards are long, and they fell into internet pornography. It's hard to believe. How can that be? And who discovered it? Of course, the worst person in the world. The wife. And she comes complaining, and then the marriage is under a cloud. Chas v'shalom. It exists out there. I know it exists. So you guys are young guys. Kavachomer, it exists, these Yetzirahs. You have to make kabbalas to keep yourself away from these kinds of temptations. Don't tell me I'm a collegiate. That's no excuse for anything. A collegiate is chayav in 613 mitzvahs. I'm telling you, a chiddush. There's no excuse for anything. We spoke earlier about the importance of your being a b'nei Torah, and mekabel upon yourself to the best of your possible ability to keep the siddurim, and to have a night seder, and to treat your limud echol properly, and to be able to succeed with the best as you can, and staying away from these others. Things which can waste time in a wholesale fashion, and being a Ben Torah. A Ben Torah is something which is a little bit amorphous, hard to define precisely, but I suspect that even better than me, when you see somebody, you can sniff out, you know, the sniff test. He's a Ben Torah. How does he talk? There's some people in this campus, unfortunately, who use profanities. of all different types. That's not how Ben Torah talks. And I'm telling you, make a Kabbalah. The Kabbalah is this word, whatever happened in the past, is no longer part of my vocabulary. You shouldn't be required to make a decision every day, should I use this word or not use this word? That's terrible. And you can't succeed every time. As Rav Desta calls in his classic Sefer, Michtav Elio, the Nekudas HaBechira. Everyone in his life is at a certain point and there's a certain choice that are to be made. Our goal in life is to raise the Nekudas HaBechira. So we should choose between to use but not this word. It's not in my vocabulary. I don't have to make a choice to use it or not. It's just not in my vocabulary. This is a very, very important point which we have to aspire to in our lives. We weigh everything about Torah learning versus other challenges in life. I have a Kabbalah to stop by 12 o'clock. And it's 12 o'clock on my clock. Not that I'm going to stop, but don't want to say. And I will continue if necessary. But my primary goal is to try to elicit questions on your part and to try to answer them as best I can. So I'm opening the floor for questions. Please, lo habayish and lomit. Another Kabbalah. Come to Yeshiva, don't be afraid to raise the hand and ask. Ask your Rebbe, ask the Mashkiach. It's a very important to ask. So I'm going to go around the room. We'll take questions as they go. Yes, sir. Speak loud, everyone can hear your question.
How are you supposed to approach like all the co-ed activities?
Good question. Co-ed activities are approached variously by different people. Very simple. If you're interested in getting married now, go for it. And whatever is appropriate, you should go. I'm happy to give you personal advice, what's appropriate, what's not. If you're not interested in getting married right now, stay away. Very simple. Approach to that question. Whether you should be interested in getting married or not, I don't know you. I can't answer that question. I don't know how old you are. I can't answer that. But that's a simple demarcation as far as I'm concerned. Yes, sir.
With regards to the beginning of this year, when you said that if you're learning Torah, you're not sure if you should do the mitzvah or let the other person do it, how do you know if he's going to do it at all?
Good question.
You can't control his actions.
That's 100%.
How do you judge that?
That's very good. That requires careful judgment and analysis. You may get it wrong, but your first response should be, I'm learning. But it's a big mitzvah, please go do this. I'm learning. Then you listen carefully. You know, even from your base measure sheet, you can pick up clues. Was it done or wasn't it done? If it was done, say, oh, Baruch Hashem, that person did it, and he would have otherwise been doing something else. So he did the mitzvah, I learned Torah, and HaKadosh Baruch was happy with both of us. As opposed to, if I would have done it, he would do something else, would have been a net loss. If no one else is doing it absolutely, then it requires a careful re-examination. But that has to be discussed on a case-by-case basis. It can't be too generalized as far as that's concerned. Okay?
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
How much time should we spend on, or can we spend on hobbies?
Hobbies? Look, I mentioned before that a person shouldn't be spending time wastefully. Most individuals, in contrast to the extreme of Rav Yashiv Zatzal, if you had his biography, need some time to breathe. They're not machines. They just learn, you learn every minute of the day and night. They're not eating or sleeping. Most of us require a little bit of a break time here and there. So for a limited amount of time that you need to just sort of relax yourself, because that's what you need, and then you have to judge how much you need. That's acceptable. And that may vary from person to person. Same as how much you sleep varies from person to person. But beyond that, as long as you're talking in the yeshiva, you should really be learning as much as you can, over and above the secular studies and things that you need. Your hobbies should be kept to the minimum that you need for your relaxation purposes. Let's say playing piano, just to pick an example out of the hat. So a person plays piano, it gives them relaxation, it gives them a certain balance. That's 100% fine. But I sit by the keys 10 hours a day. That's 10 minutes, they might be enough to give you that relaxation. Yes?
Two questions. Rabbi mentioned before about people, if a teacher assigns something which might be problematic, what if the teacher doesn't back down? He can
speak to the Mashkiach, to Rabbi Blair, to see if things of this nature.
Also, what happens in terms of, like, when midterms come around and not compromising to them?
I have to be honest with you. There are some individuals who, when they have certain examinations, are simply unable to keep the Siddurim as they were doing it until that point in time. You know, the Gemara, that same Gemara in Masechta Brachos, the same Daf, talks about, I believe it was Rava. Rava told his Talmidim, I don't want to see you in this and that month, 2 months of the year. I didn't want to see them. Why? Because that was harvest time. Harvest time. So, you know, you want to sit and learn in the Mishnah Shiva is great, but when it comes to harvest time, you better go do the harvest, otherwise your family's going to starve, including you. If you want to say that finals is harvest time, I could understand that to some extent. Midterms to a somewhat lesser extent, because it's more spread out these days. Okay, I understand that. That's why we have a reading week. And in part of the reading week, there's not even any shiur. Part yes, part no. Depends on the particular schedule. So the if you keep the actual sedarim proper, I think that should be kept no matter what. I would say the night seder, which you like to learn, which is from the shiur's official perspective, officially a voluntary endeavor, and you say to your chavrusa, listen, the next week or two, I'm overwhelmed with work. I simply cannot learn night seder. If you're spending the time appropriately on your finals or even midterms, that's okay. But if you're not going to come to the morning seder and the shiur, so you're not following the sidrei yeshiva, I can't give any dispensation for that. That requires a menial. I don't think it would give you a dispensation. You have a shiur, Yes, sir.
What about I guess for night seder, outside obligations from Y.U., like family or something, or it simply comes out that
okay, very good question. Should a person close his Gemara in order to engage and be involved in the family simcha? So the Gemara says, Mefurish and Ksubis, Mevatlin Talmud Torah, for two things. For Achnosas Kala and Levoyas Hameis, one extreme to the other. And the Vilna Gaon has an interesting remez to this from the Pesukim in Sefer Koheles. Ace this. Everything's with a Lamed. Lamed. And the Vilna says, why would a Lamed? Because Limud comes first. Lamed stands for Limud, learning. Learning trumps everything. Only two, there's no Lamed, is Ace Sefod, the Ace Rekod. So the Vilna Gaon says, because Sefod, eulogy of someone who died, or Rekod, dancing for a Chasan Kala, that is even higher priority than studying Torah. However, having said that, so a person can close his Gemara, and every single day in New York City go with a funeral or a wedding. Or both. Without exception. Without every day. It's a big community. That's absurd. You have to know when you're called upon and when you're not called upon. You can't go to every single levi and every single wedding. It's ridiculous. And if you go to a wedding, because you're invited, you feel you have to go, who said you have to be there from the opening bell to the closing bell? What does it say that? I haven't found it anywhere in the Shulchan Aruch. If you come in time for the dancing, it might also be good. You may come for the chuppah because you're close, or maybe you come to this before. They have to. Some people feel that they come a half an hour before it starts. They're sitting there. That's not included in the Vilna Gaon's dispensation of Rekod. You haven't started Rekod yet. You're just sitting around. So you have to use your judgment on that. The same as with these family obligations beyond weddings and funerals. So your parents or other families of members of your family have to be understanding of your schedule. There's a joke. I think it's in this week's Pirkei Avos, if I'm not mistaken. It says in the Perek, Ein lecha ben choron al misha osik b'torah. It says, choros al luchos. Only person who's really free, what it really means, free from the Eitz Sahara, free from it. But the joke goes in America, you need someone to do something. I'm busy. I'm going to work. I have a job, 9 to 5. No problem. Ben choron misha osik b'torah. Someone's in the yeshiva, that time is free, he'll do this, you know, the family. If you had a job and you were being paid for your job, the family would think twice before asking you to leave your job to go spend time at a barbecue somewhere or whatever. I got a job. I mean, paid by the hour. But he's a ben Torah. He's only a beast sitting in the yeshiva. You can close your gemara and go to spend this time. So, having said that, you have to know every family situation is different. Because you have to close your gemara for family obligations, bar mitzvahs, and who knows what other kinds of things. You have to use your judgment. But it shouldn't be a hefker. Okay. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
I say there's a course that is a requirement in the. It doesn't directly have to do with what you're going into, but in order to get graduated, you have to do that course. It's one of the courses which they said one should not be taking.
I didn't say that. I never said that.
Course.
I said you speak to the mashkiach. Mashkiach, if there's certain problematic or objectionable materials that you even have to study, that's what we have mashkiach for. They will try to negotiate it for you. Okay. Yes, anyone? Yes, sir.
Not that I necessarily believe it's true, but there is a criticism that based on what Rabbi said earlier, a Ben Torah will look out and say, I'm not going to take part in so many different chesed, tikkun olam, gvuras chasadim, because I'm learning. And someone looks at you and then says, you and all of your Haredi cohorts don't do anything because all you do is learn.
I'll take it. I've heard worse criticisms. Tell him, I'm going to be learning Torah, and I'm going to become a Talmud Chacham, Mr. Shem, and then one day, I'll be able to give a shiur and daf yomi and give back to the community. Or one day, because I have a greater Torah personality, I'll be able to help the community in a greater way. I'm asking a question. A guy is in medical school, and he sits 10 years, doesn't do anything else but medical school. 4 years of medical school, 4 years residency, another 2 years fellowship. He's close to the world. And everybody says, what are you doing for the world? The answer is, you'll be an MD. You'll help the world, right? So the guy's learning Torah. He says, why should I be less than that? He's learning, he's developing as more and more of a Ben Torah. And Mr. Shem one day, he'll give back. Yeah.
Is there any value to studying foreign languages?
Yeah, absolutely. Foreign languages is very important. Let's start with Hebrew. No, I'm not joking. There are people, I think it's a Hebrew requirement, I think, and that's a very important requirement. I don't know how they teach it exactly, but in principle, it's a very, very important requirement. People, unfortunately, don't know Hebrew. If you don't know Hebrew, how can you be a Talmud Chacham? How can you be a good Jew? You have to know Hebrew. You have to know be Chumash and Rashi. Start with that. You have to know. It's very, very important. I'm not going to get into Yiddish. That's not, I don't think, it's good to know for many reasons, but I can't view that as mandatory, at least for most people in this room. But other languages can be helpful. But to spend time in other languages beyond what is going to be directly impactful on your career, I can think of better ways to spend your time. Why don't you just focus on the Hebrew and the English? If you come out of this experience, you know these two languages well. You can read them, you can write them. I'll be very, very happy. I think it was Rav Hutner Zal, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, who used to say in his day, my Talmidim, they're illiterate in three languages. Hebrew, English, and Yiddish. They couldn't read any of them well, and they certainly couldn't even write any of them well, couldn't speak them well. So speak English and speak Hebrew and read them and write them. I'll be satisfied with that. Yes?
Is it a good idea to get involved in things like NCSY, etc.?
Okay. NCSY is certainly a very wonderful organization. It does wonderful things. But the person should, before undertaking any major time commitments, has to know that his primary commitment in his years in this yeshiva is to his education. Remember, somebody's paying a lot of tuition for your being here. And they're not doing it so you can fall short in your Torah or secular studies, even if you're doing good things such as NCSY. If you're able to juggle a certain amount of time of that kind of an activity, and it's not going to harm your Limudei Kodesh or Limudei Chol unduly, then it's a nice activity. There's good things. Yes, sir?
What is advised about a specific teacher, for example, that she's a prutza, or something along those lines? However, taking that specific class fulfills requirements, although the requirements can be filled another way, although that would be less productive for learning. So is one able to make that call, or is that Ika Dark Achrina?
Dark Achrina, the Gemara seems to indicate that two are equal. In other words, I can go this way, I can go that way. If, for argument's sake, a particular teacher has whatever shortcoming in this area, and but that teacher is a preferred teacher for whatever reason, either because she teaches better, she gives higher grades. I mean, I know people are interested in all kinds of reasons having teachers. Then I believe it's okay, but I would talk to the Mashkiach. Maybe you can somehow achieve that a certain dress code should be followed in our institution in all of its branches, including the collegiate branch. I think that we have, in corporations there are dress codes. They go into a law firm if they're dress codes. Again, I can't speak to the legalities. That's what we have mashgichim for. Right? These things to speak to the mashgich. He'll take care of you as best as he can. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
So, in terms of those organizations, which if you have extra time, let's say it's like a positive organization, but you're not ready to get married and just go ahead?
That's a different story. It's nothing to do with time. That is a question of being involved in. Let's take NCSY as an example. It happens to be co-ed and does wonderful things. So every individual has to know himself. If an individual will want to go to NCSY for all the right reasons, to help people out, etc., 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 but will find the co-ed aspect of it distracting, so he comes back to the Gemara on Sunday morning and his mind is wandering because of whatever he was encountering over Shabbos, you should stop it right away. Because you're not just putting in the X amount of time for the Shabbaton. It's carrying on to your head into Sunday morning, maybe Monday morning, maybe by Tuesday, by Wednesday, you can't no longer make Havdalah, you'll forget about it a little bit. But that's very time for the next Shabbaton. So you have to know yourself. This is a personal decision which I can't make for everybody. Any final questions?
Yeah.